I'm David Sedaris from the United States, and I travel with Rick Steves. Wait. Je voyage. Right? Would I say je voyage souvent, de temps en temps, je voyage avec Rick Steves.
Wow. You've picked up that French very well.
De temps en temps, pas toujours, mais de temps en temps, je voyage avec mon ami Rick Steves.
The region in France called Burgundy is famous for its wines. It delights its visitors with Romanesque abbeys, its medieval villages, pastoral countryside. In many ways, it provides travelers with the quintessential French experience. We're joined now by two friends and fellow tour guides from Burgundy, Patrick Vidal and Julie Sanbo.
Bonjour.
Bonjour. How are you both doing?
Très bien, très bien.
Nice to have you here. Now, when we think about Burgundy, I mentioned it's the quintessential image of France. That's the quintessential for maybe for clichés from a tourist point of view. Within France, how do people see Burgundy? Julie?
Well, the word that always comes to mind for me in Burgundy is hearty.
Hardy.
Everything is hearty. The earth is hearty. The people are hearty. The food is hearty.
Burgundy. Okay. Yeah.
I always have to do that with my body to make that.
It is. When I think of the cuisine, I think hearty cuisine. Yeah. Patrick?
But for the rest of the French, Burgundy is it's a place to go through. You know, it's halfway between Paris and the Alps or the south of France. And in fact, Burgundy is the French champion of one-night stop.
Is that right?
Yeah. All of Northern Europe travel down to Italy, travel down to Spain, travel down to the French...
The Côte d'Azur.
Côte d'Azur or the Alps and stops in Burgundy, in Beaune or in Dijon because it's halfway.
All right.
And there's a lot of speciality of that, of the hotels are doing one-night stop and people are just... coming through and motorways taking people down.
Let's say that is your actual destination. There is a pretty good connection now from Paris to Burgundy.
It's very quick. The TGV is an hour and something. It's very, very efficient. You know?
Now, historically, Burgundy was a power in the Middle Ages. What's the story about that?
Well, for 400 years, from the mid-1300s to the mid-1400s, the first Duke of Burgundy was one of the sons of the King of France, and they became stronger during the time of the Hundred Year War. And we always think of the Hundred Year War as the Franco-English War, but it was much more complicated than that, and the Burgundians were in the middle of that. And at some point, Burgundy was stronger than France.
I mean, ruling lands all the way to the Netherlands.
To Flanders, all the way down to...
I always like to think that if things have turned slightly differently, France would be called Burgundy and will be traveling to Paris thinking of calling the region France.
Isn't that interesting? It's like Germany was united under Prussian rule, kind of, and it shaped what Germany was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
France could have been united under Burgundian rule.
Yeah, it could have happened.
Now, 1,000 years ago, Burgundy was very important in the monastic movement. When Europe fell into the Dark Ages and there was all sorts of chaos and there was no order that Rome provided, sort of the way to replace that was this European-wide movement of monasteries, and it started in Cluny, right?
Cluny in 910, yes, they developed it, and it became the biggest church in Christendom.
So there was hundreds of abbeys, and the head abbey was there in Cluny. And to this day, there's still a strong monastic feeling. Have you been to Thésée? What is Thésée?
Well, that's a different community.
Uh-huh.
It's
kind of a modern...
Diverse, yeah. It's a place where a lot of youth come and meditate, and it's non-denominational. They have what was started by a Protestant minister, I believe, and there's Catholic priests that are there. When they say the service is the same in about 7 different languages.
It's got the elegance and the mysticism a little bit and the meditative
dimension
of Catholicism. But at the same time, it's celebrating ecumenism and all the different Christian denominations are there.
Right. And a lot of silence... Meditation, prayer.
There's one part of the monastery we always forget about is that thanks to the monastery, we've got good wine in Burgundy.
Our guides are Julie Sanvo. She's an American who left Kansas for a new life in Burgundy many years ago. And Patrick Vidal, who piloted tourist barges in Burgundy before moving his family to Brittany in the northwest of France. He continues guiding American visitors to the regional specialties of his native country. We're exploring the region of Burgundy in the middle of East Central France right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Let's talk about cuisine, because in Burgundy, you've got some quintessential French dishes, and they are, like Julie said, they're hearty. First of all, you got the wine. Why is the wine of Burgundy
Everything
so famous?
With wine.
I mean, the first development of that is that you've got monasteries around, so those guys they're given land. They've got time to take care of the wine. They've got time to do experiments. So they'll develop the wine. Look at Belgium. Look at a lot of places around in Germany. I mean, the best beers you find about are from abbeys.
What was the phrase in a monastery, work and prayer?
Yeah.
That was sort of the thing.
Absolutely.
You'd work the field and you'd pray a lot. And they had the time, as you said.
Yeah. Local farmer had to sell their wine to make money out of it or use the wine for their own consumption. The monks had time to take care of it.
In France, there's something a lot of Americans misunderstand. Explain the focus on the actual grape as opposed to the actual village or valley.
The way it works is different. I mean, in the States, you refer to wines by what grape comes uh-huh. into the making of the wine. In Southern Europe, you refer to wine by where it's coming from. So it goes from regional to name of the village to name of the field.
So Burgundy could be different kinds of grape.
Burgundy's only one grape.
What is that?
Pinot Noir.
It's Pinot Noir, okay.
Mostly, technically. There is, Beaujolais uses a Gamay grape, and that's administratively part of Burgundy, but they treat it as its own region.
And you mentioned hardy is the word for Burgundy. Would you characterize the wine as hardy?
They say that it's a hardy wine. I think Americans think of more of a full-bodied wine as being a Bordeaux with the Merlots and the Cabernets.
I see. Now, in some countries, the economic arrangements are such that you have huge corporate wineries that own up most of the production. Does France have a policy that encourages big wineries or protects small family wineries, or is that an issue?
I think it's a practical thing. I mean, if you look at the different wine regions in France, wherever you make good money, you've got little makers. You're going to have little properties because they can survive on small estate. Wherever you got little amount of money coming through the sale of your wine, you'll have big co-ops and big properties.
So you're saying the finer wine is more likely to be made by smaller wineries?
Yeah, that's how it works. Champagne is a big thing on that. You don't have any big houses. You got big houses of champagne, but you got a lot of little makers.
And
Burgundy is a bit like that as well.
And Burgundy's like that too. Mm-hmm. They have small villages and winemakers, but that also makes it more higher end because it's harder to get. There's not as much production.
Less production. And sometimes they'll hold down the production just to keep the value up.
In Burgundy and in Beaune, you have the Hospice of Beaune that does their wine auction every year. And they've been doing that for 500 years. And that brings in a lot of money to the area, to the hospice. It's always been based on being funded by the vineyards.
So if you're a traveler and you're coming to Burgundy and you love wine and you want to learn about French wine, you can go to Beaune, and there's the Marché aux Vins, and there's different wineries there that welcome guests.
Yeah.
And you can go into the countryside.
Tasting.
What's your favorite experience in the countryside, Patrick, for tasting wine?
Well, you've got a lot the idea is to look for a little winemaker, a little place where I've got the sign saying dégustation, which is which is my wine tasting. And then you just knock at the door and try to see if you can make your way. Oh, yeah, most
so
of the time.
So if you're driving around the countryside in your rental car, the keyword dégustation.
Dégustation. And,
or
you
biking.
Walk in. Yeah.
Or
biking.
Bicycle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can. That's it could be an interesting thing going on a biking wine tasting yeah. tour.
It's better than driving.
Better than driving. You're right. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Patrick Vidal and Julie Sanvo, and we're talking about Burgundy. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. And Daniel's calling from Washington, D.C. Daniel, thanks for the call.
Thanks a lot, Rick. I'm traveling to France in August for 11 nights, and my question is this. So far, we're planning on flying into Nice and out of Paris, and we think we want to go to the Riviera, French Riviera, Provence, Paris, and Normandy. And my question is there a way to customize our itinerary so we can go to a town such as Burgundy or like Burgundy with that same charm, kind of to break up our trip? And if so, where should we go, and would we take a train or car?
There's so much good stuff in the Riviera and in Provence. That's Avignon and Arles and Nîmes and so on, Rhone Valley. Okay, so between Avignon and Paris, Patrick and Julie, what would be a fun way for Daniel to get that flavor of the countryside?
I think the best stop would be to stop in Beaune anyway.
Burgundy.
Because it's easily reachable by train. It works pretty well. After that, you're a bit stuck. I mean, if you're by train, you're a bit stuck in the town. But there's a lot of you can rent a bike and go and see the vineyard. You can they organize some local tours as well.
And there's minibus tours. Minibus
right, they do great wine tours.
Mm-hmm. Daniel, are you renting a car? Daniel, did you mention?
Well, my thought was we would fly into Nice, not get a car then, but rent a car for Provence. Mm-hmm. And then a thought was we would rent a car and drive from Provence to Paris, stopping somewhere in between to break up the trip. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know if just speaking with you, we want to stop in Burgundy, but I'm not sure if that's possible with our itinerary. And just to get a sense of, is it? And then also, if not, what towns could we do?
You know, everything is possible if you have a rental car with the French auto route.
Well, you're going to drive through Burgundy anyway.
Yeah. So, drive through Burgundy, stop in Beaune overnight, but on the way to Paris, stop at Guédelon, the project where they're building the 13th century castle. This is definitely very unique.
Now, that's
it's
interesting.
It's a beautiful part of Burgundy.
And you've actually worked there, haven't you? Can you explain about this building a medieval castle project just between Burgundy and Paris?
Well, it was kind of a crazy idea of a man named Michel Guyot, who owned a castle already and always wondered, like all of us do, how do they build castles in the 13th century? And they thought the best way to do it was to experiment, to try it. And so they got together this crazy idea of trying to build a castle. So they've been doing it for the last 15 years, and it's coming along quite nicely.
So this is a private initiative?
It was a private...
Just a bunch of enthusiasts.
Well, they started out actually a nonprofit organization, but now it's privately owned. But it's a tourist attraction where you're watching people build a 13th century castle by hand.
So we're talking like human-powered hamster wheels and all that kind of stuff.
Right, right. No power tools. Right, just one stone at a time.
When will it be finished, the castle?
Well, I don't think it'll...
Do they expect to finish it?
Yeah, about 2025, they think. But they've also built a mill. So you can go see that.
So it's really just a working medieval industrial complex.
There you go.
Wow.
It's really, really difficult to describe it, but everybody that sees it is just fascinated by it.
So, Daniel, this is called the Château de Guédelon. I think it's spelled G-U-E-D-E-L-O-N.
Exactly.
That's worth putting on your list. Have a good time, Daniel.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. Bye now. And William's calling in from Little Falls in New Jersey. William, thanks for your call.
You bet. I'll be floating down the canal from Gray to Branche, and was looking for some places right off the river or nearby via taxi to go see.
Well, we just happen to have a barge captain in our studio right now.
Wow.
Patrick, what would be some advice for William on a barge?
Well, I must admit that the gray area, it's an area when I've never worked up there. I mean, okay. I've worked more south between Dijon and Beaune and all the area more south. But it's a lovely place. There's a lot of things to see around there.
And in general, you have the flexibility on a canal ride in France to, you're on these industrial age canals, you can
William, are you renting a little barge or are you on an organized trip?
We're navigating ourselves on a small boat.
So you'll have all the flexibility to stop wherever you want to moor up whenever you want. That's very, very easy and very relaxing.
Do you have to be a talented navigator?
We'll be speeding down the river at about 6 miles an hour.
Oh, 6 miles is a bit optimistic. Huh? We don't plan on that kind of speed. That'd be a bit fast for you.
What would you plan on if you're looking at a map for how many miles a day?
How many miles? That's all depend what you want to do. I mean, you can cruise all day long if you want, and you can kind of cover ground. But all the point is to stop everywhere. Yeah. I mean, don't even think of a taxi. Just look at the next village, stop, moor up the boat, and walk to this village through fields. And I mean, the countryside up there is just mind blowing.
Right. Discover.
Yeah.
Right. Patrick, describe for our listeners, I mean, because I can imagine hiring onto a tour on a big barge where you have a chef and you have organized activities. But if you're a family of four and you just rent the actual private canal boat, what's that like?
Well, think of it as a floating RV.
An
RV. It's a floating RV. I mean, it's a simple kitchen corner, it's a little lounge, it's two bedrooms, three bedrooms, depending how, but very small accommodations. And then you pilot yourself.
And you don't need to worry about storms?
No, you don't need to worry about storms, no. I mean, what they do is that officially you're not allowed to drive them, but the guy who's renting the boat to you gives you a little training, which is officially supposed to be 3 hours, which end up being more 3 minutes or 4 minutes than 3 hours. According to the fact that he gives you this training, you are allowed to drive this boat all around the place. Small engines, it's nothing to worry about. It's very easy to do. And all you have to think is aim to the next lock and get into the lock.
And then when you get, what's it like coming to a lock?
It's very easy.
Canal float.
Yeah, it's very relaxed. It's very easy. Entering the lock is just like you've got to take your time, and your boat is not very fast anyway. And you're going to bump from one side to the other one. So that's
and if there's a lock keeper, don't arrive at noon because he'll be eating lunch and he'll be off until 2 o'clock.
12 and 1.
Well, this would be the problem, William, with the American sort of aggressive itinerary planning. You'd come to the lock, it's lunchtime, and the canal lock keeper is having his lunch, and he's not going to break from that.
No. Nope.
So the typical American might be all, come on, I've got an appointment. But the French people would go, hey, it's lunchtime. Let's join them.
I'm prepared to take a chill pill.
I think if William has already planned to book on these boats, he knows where he's going. I think I wouldn't worry about that too much.
Yeah.
William, that sounds like so much fun. Have you done any canal barging before?
We went on the Canal du Midi.
And how was your experience there, William?
The experience was wonderful, which is why we're doing it again with people who actually took the trip separately. So we have two couples on a small boat. While I have the opportunity, let me ask you, though, we're all wine hounds, and it's my general opinion, please correct me if I'm wrong, that wine in the Côte d'Or, the Côte de Beaune, Côte de Mar, is just very, very expensive, and that real values are available in the Côte Chalonnaise. Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, I kind of agree with that. I mean, it's the wine which are not from the big names in the Côte d'Or are always less expensive. But if you look around anywhere you are, you'll find some wines even from the Côte d'Or which are reasonable and good values as well.
Especially if you're buying in a wine shop instead of in a restaurant and you drink it on your boat.
Oh, yeah.
Boat.
If you buy it in a wine shop or even a little grocery store or something like that,
you'll find I would go high end in a grocery store and drink it on the boat. Hey, William, thanks for your call. Great trip.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Right.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about Burgundy with Patrick Vidal and Julie Sanvaux. I want to just cover the cuisine. Julie, when you think about Burgundian cuisine, a lot of times anywhere in France you see de Bourgogne on the menu. Is that a way to prepare it, or what does that mean to you?
Well, if you're preparing food in Burgundy, you're using wine. So you're going to have your bœuf bourguignon, which is your beef that's been marinated for a long time, slow cooked in Burgundy wine. Same with coq au vin, is the rooster that's been marinated in the wine. And so almost everything includes the wine in it.
So you're talking about this hearty, sort of rustic cuisine. Mm. When you're in Burgundy, what would you go for to have the sort of the quintessential meal in the quintessential corner of France?
Oh, well, I would start off with œuf en murette. I have a hard time saying that, which is the sauce that you've used for your bœuf bourguignon and reduced down with some bacon and onions and poured over a poached egg with a piece of toast.
Nice.
And start off with that. And then if you want more, you can go on with your coq au vin or your bœuf bourguignon and some chocolat for dessert.
Ah, nice. And Patrick, I love escargot. What is escargot de Bourgogne? Is there escargot Burgundy style?
Yes, that's the escargot made Burgundy style, because in fact they're not coming from Burgundy originally. They're coming from Eastern Europe. It's cooked in their shell, or cooked outside of the shell, but put back in their shell with the garlic and parsley butter, which is the most important part of it. I mean, forget about the snail. Put your bread into the
bread
sauce.
So
when you have your plate of little tiny spots for each shell.
Yes, 6 or 12,
Has that snail been taken out and cooked and put back
absolutely.
In?
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, very often they use the same shells over and over.
Yes.
They wash them and use them again.
And they put them in there and it's packed around this garlic and butter mix and then it all melts out.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's something you can just, if you have your boat on the canal, you can just go into a shop and get these shells and these snails?
You can find them already prepared now.
Prepared.
Already prepared. All you do is put them in the oven, heat them up.
TV dinner.
Yeah, that's it. That's
easy. Burgundian style.
Burgundian style. This is Travel with Rick Steves. You're just enticing me to enjoy the culture of Burgundy, and I think I'll do it on a canal boat for part of that vacation.
That's a good one. That's
so nice.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington, by Tim Catton, Kazmer Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Andrew Wakeling uploads the show to our website, Sheila Gerzoff handles affiliate promotions, and our theme music is by Jerry Frank. Find out when other stations around the country are Travel with Rick Steves. There's a list at ricksteves.com/radio.